Testing, testing.
This is
Wayne Carroll of the SEC Historical Society on April 18th, 2006, interviewing Bob Strahota. Bob, thanks very much for being here. You actually had two stints at the SEC, the first starting in 1964.
Yes, that's correct.
And could you describe how you came to work at the commission?
Well, it was interesting. I actually spent the summer of 1963, which was my between my first and second years in business school, as an intern at the SEC. And that, I think, sold me on the organization. But as I recall, I had first learned about the SEC from one of my finance professors at Cornell's business school, Arthur Nielsen, who had served on the staff of the SEC in the late 30s, early 1940s, I believe.
And what were some of the main topics or some of the main issues that the commission was dealing with at the time?
Well, it was a very exciting time. The commission had just completed its special study of the securities markets, and it was in the process of implementing many of those recommendations. And there were 1964 amendments to the federal securities laws that addressed some of those recommendations, and some of those affected the Division of Corporation Finance, where I worked.
And where was the commission located in Washington at the time?
Ah, the famous Tar Paper Shack, 425 2nd Street Northwest. I had the good fortune to spend a summer and I think approximately 1 year in that building before we moved to 500 North Capitol.
Mm-hmm. And did you spend this whole period in corporate finance?
Yes, my first tenure at the SEC, 1964 through 72, was all in the Division of Corporation Finance.
Mm-hmm. Was there much attention at the time focused on the international dimension of securities regulation? Was there a concerted effort to deal with cross-border issues that you recall?
Well, at the time, cross-border issues were minuscule compared to the volume of transactions we see today. Chairman Manuel Cohen, as I recall, had a very strong interest in international matters. Indeed, I believe that at one point in his career, he actually spent a sabbatical of 1 year studying international securities law in several countries, including Israel. And there were a few releases that the commission used to deal with this. There were, in theory, the commission's jurisdiction actually could extend to a U.S. issuer who sold its securities from the U.S. solely overseas to foreign investors. So there were some threshold releases there that laid a foundation for things to come. As I recall, also the 1964 amendments to the securities laws also required the commission to address whether a foreign issuer with shareholders in the United States could be subject to the new registration and reporting provisions that were imposed by those amendments.
Mm-hmm. But this was well before any type of Office of International Affairs.
There was no Office of International Affairs, and as I recall, at the time I started, I don't think there was even a international group in the Division of Corporation Finance. That came later. There was an international branch set up, I can't recall the specific date, but I think it was probably sometime in the early 1970s. The original chief was a fellow named Carl Bobolas.
Mm-hmm. And following this first time at the SEC, you then went on to into private practice for almost two decades.
I did, yes. Mm-hmm. I joined the Washington office of a what was then a Chicago law firm, Kirkland & Ellis. Now has offices in a number of other cities, as do many of the larger firms.
Mm-hmm. And after that period, you got homesick, I guess, for the commission, or how did you end up beginning your second stint?
Well, my second stint began in 1991, and I don't know whether I got homesick for the commission, but I certainly felt that a lot of the issues I was dealing with in private practice tended to be the same issues year over year. I had several clients where we would do an annual transaction, such as an offering or whatnot, and that came to be a bit redundant. And so I thought about going back to the SEC because I always felt that the issues there from a policy standpoint were more interesting. And I interviewed Chairman Breeden. Richard Breeden had just become the SEC chairman, I think, in the late 1980s under George Bush Sr. And I interviewed Jim Doty, who Chairman Breeden had brought in as the general counsel, and Philip Parker and some other people in the Office of General Counsel. And they decided to bring me on as an attorney fellow in the Office of General Counsel.
And could you describe what that program involves or entailed?
It's a flexible program. It's been used by the commission in that office and in other offices. Division of Corporation Finance and Market Regulation have used attorney fellows as well. And they use them for different things. In my area, the way Jim Doty put it to me, and I hope he was speaking partly with jest, he said, you know, there's a lot of requests we are getting now that the Berlin Wall has fallen and Iron Curtain, and we're getting a tremendous number of requests for assistance from emerging securities markets, and a guy with your age and experience is someone we might be able to send overseas, so we don't have to use our senior staff to do this. So I said, fine, that sounds interesting. I actually had not had any experience with international securities transactions in my years in private practice. I had done a great deal of other things, mostly in the transactional area, but all my clients had been domestic transactions, and all of the deals I worked on had been U.S. transactions. So I thought I might be a little challenged about this, but as it turned out, it worked out to be a very good match. Because what the people in these emerging markets wanted to know was really how we did things in the U.S. so that they could set up their own securities regulators or capital markets. So I wasn't required to be an expert on international law or civil law or foreign company law or anything like that initially, although I have been fortunate to pick up a good bit of this over the past 16 years or so.
Before we get into the details of your international work, you mentioned that a lot of things had changed on the international stage. How had the commission changed since the first time you had been there? What sort of differences did you notice?
Oh, I think there were tremendous changes. One thing that was very evident was the number of additional offices that had been set up. When I worked at the commission in the 1960s through 1972, a good bit of that time, the commission secretary was a gentleman named Orville Du Bois, sort of a legendary figure. One of his capabilities was the ability to type a remarkable number of words per minute. At that time, Orville Du Bois served not only as the commission's secretary, but essentially as its press or public relations officer and anything else that involved contact with the media or special events like that. Orville usually handled that by himself. And one of the amazing things when I came back was, of course, the office of secretary was much more than Orville and one person. Under Jack Katz, it had some deputy secretaries and a number of other staff. But there was also a separate office of legislative affairs, which was new. There was an office of, I believe it was called Public Policy, OPAPER, Office of Public, responsible for dealing with the press. I think the name has changed several times, actually, in recent years. But that had quite a substantial staff. And then, of course, there had been an Office of International Affairs that was established. That, as I recall, was established in 1989, and it was split off initially from the Division of Enforcement and staffed by two attorneys and two support staff initially, who had the two attorneys had worked on international cases in the Division of Enforcement.
I believe Michael Mann was the...
That's right. Mike Mann was the first head of that, because he had a tremendous amount of experience with international cases going back to his work as an associate director in the Division of Enforcement. And his assistant, Paul Leder, joined him in that office, and soon thereafter they hired a few additional attorneys as well. But the office was set up originally to facilitate the Commission's international enforcement cooperation, and it built out into other areas from that.
You mentioned that increasingly requests for assistance were coming in from other countries. Was there much precedence for that before the early 90s?
In talking to some former staff members who served either contemporaneous with me or whom I knew through my work practicing before the SEC, I'm told that there was some earlier consideration to setting up an office. I think Alan Mostoff, who served in the Division of Investment Management, told me at one time he had made such a proposal to an earlier chairman, but I guess it didn't happen at that time. And I think there had always been requests that had come in on an ad hoc basis, say from a country indicating, we're thinking of adopting a securities law and establishing an SEC. Is there someone from the SEC who could help us with this or who could review our law? And those were largely dealt with on an ad hoc basis, depending on the expertise that was needed. It could be the general counsel's office, but it could be other staff members as well.
And one such request actually ended up taking you over to Poland for quite a while.
Well, that was a little bit more proactive, actually, because one of the things we decided to do shortly after I came on as an attorney fellow, and this also can be attributed, I think, to Chairman Breeden's leadership and to Jim Doty and the international group in the Office of General Counsel, we decided, well, we noticed, first of all, that there were several other agencies in the government that had already gone to the U.S. Agency for International Development and obtained funding for international technical assistance programs so that they could obtain some foreign assistance reimbursement for providing this assistance, because the requests were becoming more frequent. And at the same time, I think Congress had passed something called the Support for Eastern European Democracy Act, so there was new aid funding available there. So what Jim Doty proposed to Richard Breeden was that we get some of this money from AID. So I worked with my boss in General Counsel's office at that time, Tom Riesenberg, and one of the first things we did was a proposal for funding from AID. Well, of course, we had to tell them what we were going to do with the money, and the proposals at the time were that we would place advisors overseas if other securities commissions, particularly in Central and Eastern Europe, desired them. And as I recall, when we got the funding, my boss, Tom Riesenberg, made a trip overseas to meet with the heads of some of these commissions. And we were thinking that the original posting might be in Hungary, because at that time we believed that they might be one of the most advanced. They had reopened their stock exchange very early. But as it turned out, the most enthusiasm for this proposal came from Poland and their commission, which was headed by a gentleman named Leszław Paga. So I ended up going to Poland. The position was actually competed. Other people interviewed for it, but it was hoped that I think that I would get the position, since I that was one of the reasons for my coming on board.
Mm-hmm. And at this time, did Poland already have an SEC-type institution, or was it run out of a different ministry? How was it
Poland
set up?
Poland began looking at setting up an SEC and reopening the Warsaw Stock Exchange in the late 1980s, I think 1988, 1989. And I understand they actually had some visits to the U.S. They met with some private sector lawyers. As it turned out, there was a cadre of, I think, about four key people who were in either the Ministry of the Economy or Privatization over there. And they took the lead in getting a securities law passed and getting the Warsaw Stock Exchange reopened in, I believe, April 1991. So I really came on the scene just a little over a year after that. I began my one-year secondment with them in June of 1992.
And what form did the assistance take? Was it more advising on setting up securities legislation or also trying to set up the institutional framework?
It was a combination of things. It became, I think, readily apparent to the Polish Commission that they did need amendments to the law. So after a year, it was already evident that additional legislation would be necessary. And I worked on that. I commented on various drafts of that legislation. But I think that in looking back on the year in retrospect, there were probably about 40 discrete areas where I was asked to either provide assistance, mostly to the Securities Commission, but also to the Warsaw Stock Exchange on some issues. Mm-hmm. So it was a variety of some things. My presence there also enabled me to set up some training programs that were delivered by some of my colleagues who came over to work with me. We delivered an early program on broker-dealer regulation and examination. I recall it was quite interesting, actually, because the Polish Securities Commission at the time did not have a room that could accommodate that program, and we did that in a building that looks like a Russian wedding cake building in Poland. It takes up about 4 city blocks, and it's known as the Palace of Culture. And we did that on a room in a room, very heavy marble and columns, that overlooked a large theater. And I'm told it's where the Communist Party used to have their annual convocations. And the particular room we were in had a balcony so that the leaders of the party, if things weren't going as they wanted, could walk out on the balcony and give signals to the people on the stage. So the room had a lot of significance, I think, for some of the Polish people who were there, and we were quite impressed by it ourselves. I think there were 4 of us delivering the program.
And during that year, where did you actually have an office?
I had an office right in the Polish Securities Commission, which was in the centrum of Washington. I think it was called Plac Postanco, Place of the Revolution.
So did you have the SEC logo and an American flag somewhere? And
yes, actually. When the appointment was announced, we had a brief press conference at the SEC. Richard Breeden introduced me. There were maybe 4 or 5 reporters present. And Richard gave me the SEC flag and the SEC an SEC emblem or seal, and we did put the seal up in my office at the Polish Commission, and then subsequently, I believe there was a plaque given to Chairman Paga to commemorate the occasion, also, which sits in the Polish Commission's closed meeting room.
Mm-hmm. And what was the state of privatization during your stay?
Well, this was really interesting because here I was, one person advising the Securities Commission and the Stock Exchange, and there was a Ministry of Privatization, and it was a fairly sizable building, like one of our buildings in the Federal Triangle. And on the third floor of that building, there was a whole floor of Western advisors from the U.S. and other countries who were the privatization experts who were trying to design a mass privatization program. And this was somewhat interesting because Chairman Paga of the Polish Commission, with whom I grew to be quite close, he and I both had some reservations about trying to force companies onto the securities market en masse, but that was what was being done in Russia and the Czech Republic, so there was some precedent for this. At the time, I think, when I arrived, if I recall correctly, there were only 5 issues, I think, listed on the Warsaw Stock Exchange, and each of these had been privatized individually. Nevertheless, there were these substantial efforts toward mass privatization, and I remembered the year I was there, initially all this work had been done on the mass privatization plan, and it was presented to the Polish Sejm, their parliament, and The Parliament voted it down, much to the shock of the privatization minister and many of the advisors. They regrouped rather quickly, and they came up with a revised, more modest plan, but it actually took them several years of tinkering with this to do this, and in the interim, the Polish market had really become very successful through individual privatizations, and I think between the year when I started there in June 1992 with the five issues, I think that we're up into the high teens when I left in June of 2003. And moreover, one of the other things that had happened was when I arrived, many of the issues were selling below the price at which they had originally been privatized. And then all of a sudden, I think it was in early 2003, a lot of interest developed in the market. I'm not sure exactly what prompted it. I think in part it may have been the introduction of a Polish mutual fund that contributed to this to raise funds and invest in the market. But there began a quite an upturn in the market, and I think if you count from when it started through the peak, which was sometime in 1994 after I had left, the market went up about 700%. So by that time, the market had become pretty well established and was regarded as one of the leaders and one of those in Central Europe that hadn't grown through the mass privatization. Privatization funds were introduced later in the 1990s, but if you really look at the process, the privatization funds and the companies that were in their portfolios were not significant contributors to the growth of the Polish market. So they marched to the beat of a different drummer, and they were successful doing it. And I was very pleased to see that, because I think that they did it the right way, really.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there were other advisors for privatization and from other countries as well. Was there much concern, say, on the European side that an American agency was in there advising the Polish government as a likely future member of the European community on how to structure their capital markets?
I don't think it was that much of an issue in 1992, 1993. If you were talking about this, say, 1 or 2 years before the actual admission date, which was, May 2004, I think, then it would have been much more concerned, because at that time, of course, you run through something called an acquis, and there are all sorts of articles that reflect the European Union policy, and you have to be vetted as to whether you comply with this. But back in 1992, I think the Polish Commission was really seeking the best advice it could get, and not necessarily from one source. There were some things I saw in the draft Polish law that struck me as puzzling, and at that time I actually did not know that much about EU legislation. I recall there was one piece that I finally tracked it down, and I found that it was a provision that was actually based upon a 1989 draft of the European Union proposed takeover directive, and the Poles have elected to put that in their draft securities law. And that was quite fascinating, because the EU actually took until after 2000 before they finally were able to adopt the takeover directive, and it was adopted in quite different form from the 1989 version. So you can see from that that the EU legislation was very much a moving target, and it's quite difficult for many of these countries to, even today, to be adapting to it, because in the securities area particularly, the EU legislation has been changing and improving a great deal. So there wasn't really much much conflict in the early days at all. In fact, as I recall, I was actually asked to sit by the Polish Commission to sit on a three-person committee that interviewed candidates for an EU-funded project, which was more or less a public relations advisor for the Polish Commission, who could advise them on how to do things like preparing an annual report and establishing a press office and that. So it was quite compatible, really.
What were some of the main challenges that the Poles were facing that you saw during your time there in setting up this whole new regime?
They were getting some criticism from some people in the market and some economic think tanks, and also from the Ministry of Privatization about not being not being more oriented to trying to make the market grow faster. And I think that if you look at what happened, the polls really put an emphasis on quality and strong disclosure in the companies that were going public. And whereas this may have limited some of them, I think it also lent a lot to the investor credibility and confidence in their markets. And it proved to be a successful strategy.
And you finished up your stay in Warsaw in June of 1993?
Yes, that's right. I finished up then, and just toward the end of the stay, everyone was quite pleased with the outcome. Actually, I was quite flattered. On my last week there, we had a ceremony in the commission room of the Polish Commission, and unbeknownst to me, Chairman Paga presented me with a medal. Well, first thing I had to do was get the medal and the citation translated with my dictionary to figure out what I'd won. But it turned out to be an officer's cross for meritorious service, and I'm extremely proud of that. And I'm not aware of other advisors. I'm aware of one other advisor, I guess, who received that from another ministry. So I'm quite pleased with that. But the project had been so successful, the people at USAID said, well, how about stopping for about 30 days in Prague and seeing if we can help develop a capital markets regulation and market development program for the Czech Republic. And at that time, I think the Czechs had already split off from the Slovaks. And I said, well, Prague is supposed to be beautiful. I guess my family can wait for me another 30 days. So I did go to Prague, and I worked on this through a number of meetings with people throughout the government and the private sector. The Czech Republic was very different because they'd had the mass privatization. So there were many, many companies that could potentially be traded, but there were very few companies that were traded. They had also used something called vouchers for mass privatization, and there were some people who seized upon these vouchers as a way of setting up investment funds. What they would do is they would set up a fund and offer the shares in the fund in exchange for the vouchers. Then they, of course, would use the vouchers to purchase some of the companies that were available for privatization. And there's a rather infamous gentleman who was, I think, behind the initial scheme on this, a fellow named Victor Kozieni, who set up something called the Harvard Capital Fund. No relation to Harvard University, other than I believe he claims to have attended there. And this fund started offering returns to investors, or promises that, you know, if they invested with us, they would get a certain return on their money. And then other banks and legitimate organizations also started offering similar returns. So a lot of the vouchers went to these investment funds. Well, make a long story short, Mr. Kozieni is persona non grata in the Czech Republic, and I understand he's living someplace in the Caribbean, has been involved in another similar scheme in Azerbaijan. But that was one problem, investor confidence in the Polish market, because there was already some doubts. But one of the really different things was that the Authority for Securities in the Czech Republic was in the Ministry of Finance. They had a securities law, but they had elected not to set up a separate securities commission. And I can recall meeting with the Deputy Minister of Finance, and his view was, I think, very similar to maybe the Austrian economist Friedrich Hayek, who believed very much in free markets and that you didn't really need that much regulation. And they didn't really feel that they needed an independent securities commission. If there were some things to be done, like licensing brokers, they would do that out of the Ministry of Finance. And I met with some of the staff that were assigned to that in the Ministry of Finance, and to give you an idea of the importance they placed on these few staff members, they were basically in a bare room with a table and four chairs, and that was about it. I can also recall at the time, as I was talking to some of the people at the Ministry of Finance, they had a system where they had a commissioner who was, they called him a commissioner, who was responsible for overseeing the market. There were actually two markets. There was the Prague Stock Exchange, and then there was a less formal electronic market that had been set up by one of the privatization gurus. And I recall asking the commissioner responsible for the less formal market, the electronic RTS system. I said, what do you do to surveil this market? And the response came back translated through the check. Well, there's really nothing to worry about. Everything is electronic. So I sensed that the Czechs would have some trouble. As it turned out, by the late 1990s, they realized they did need a securities commission. They set one up, and actually when I was back at the SEC, I had an opportunity to go over there and to provide some short-term advice on the organization of their new commission. And actually I was accompanied in that by a former SEC commissioner, the late Commissioner Richard Smith. So we both provided advice to the Czech Commission, but it really was a few years later in coming into being.
Mm-hmm. And after the AID program and extension was finished, then you then returned to the Office of International Affairs.
I did, really. What happened is that in 1992, of course, we had the presidential election, and President Clinton appointed his own SEC chairman, Arthur Levitt, to replace Richard Breeden, and Chairman Levitt came on board in 1993, I believe, and one of the early things he decided to do was to consolidate the international technical assistance work, which was spread among several departments, into the Office of International Affairs under Mike Mann. And Mike met with me and offered me an opportunity to come up and join his office as an assistant director responsible for that program.
And what did the program look like at that time? What kind of areas were covered?
Well, there were several interesting things that were being done. One was one of Chairman Breeden's great initiatives, and this is a good day to talk about it because the program is actually being held at the SEC as we speak. It's the International Institute for Securities Market Development. It's a two-week program that the Commission has offered annually for emerging securities markets since 1991, initiated by Chairman Breeden. That program was originally run by a group in the Office of Economic Analysis at the SEC, and two of the economists responsible for that program transferred into the Office of International Affairs at the same time I did. So that was one area of consolidation. There were other things, of course, that were already being done in terms of international enforcement assistance in Mike Mann's office. So essentially it was the principal consolidation was from the General Counsel's office and the Office of Economic Analysis into International Affairs.
Mm-hmm. And what was the background of the countries that were seeking technical assistance or training? Were they mostly Eastern European countries, or what was their...
Well, the International Institute that the Commission offered was a worldwide institute. Any emerging market could come to it. We did not have money to pay for the emerging markets sending their people, so they would either have to pay their own way, or many of them obtained funding separately through AID or through other international financial institutions such as the World Bank or the Asia Development Bank. We were able to use some of our initial funding from AID to pay for the Central and Eastern European delegates coming. And then in 1994, a second law had been passed, the Freedom Support Act, for assistance to the countries of the former Soviet Union. So we were able to obtain funding under that, and we used that to, among other things, bring representatives from the securities commissions and exchanges of those countries over to programs in the U.S.
Did the assistance and or the programs change as some of these emerging markets emerged and became more established?
Well, it did. One of the things we realized we needed to do once we'd brought everyone into the Office of International Affairs was to develop a technical assistance strategy and to run that by the Commission. So one of the first things I worked on under Mike Mann's direction was a white paper. And we had learned several things from our experience from 1991 through 1994, when we, I think, completed the white paper in early 1994. One of them was that although many agencies did use long-term advisors overseas, it did not work well for the commission. It worked very well in my case, but that was unusual in that I was an attorney fellow brought in more or less for that type of activity at the commission. But if we wanted to, say, take a long-term advisor from corporation finance or market regulation or enforcement, it raised the problem because we'd have to give up a slot, and all of the directors and the senior management of the commission weren't happy with that. We also felt that there were a lot of logistical problems associated with supporting an advisor. The Treasury Department has gone the other way, and they still do to this day. They have always used longer-term advisors, but they have hired people who are generally either retired people or private sector people to do this, and they required quite a substantial support operation or contractor to do this, and the folks at the SEC, I think, decided quite properly in retrospect that we didn't want to do this, and that our strengths really lay in SEC training programs, which we could deliver some on a routine annual basis, like the International Institute in Washington, and ad hoc missions where we could take mini versions of the Institute or specialized programs overseas and deliver them in different regions. We realized there wasn't any way we could serve all of the emerging markets of the world, but as things evolved, we developed a strategy where we tried to at least have some form of regional presence in terms of doing training programs in Latin America, Central and Eastern Europe, former Soviet Union, Middle East. I don't think we've ever succeeded in doing our own programs in the Far East, well, not on an annual basis, but we in those cases, would work with other organizations such as the Asia Development Bank and the Asia-Pacific Economic Coordination Council to send SEC representatives to their programs.
I imagine the issues that the office was confronted with pretty much covered all bases, from market reg to corp fin to accounting, pretty much everything under the sun.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to these training programs and the request to send people overseas and to comment on laws, we would get, just on an ad hoc basis, I think it probably started on average of about 150 written requests for any variety of questions. Some of them remarkably simple, like can you send us an annual report or an organization chart? Others quite complex, like how do you conduct an examination of a broker-dealer? So all of those were consolidated or basically came through the Office of International Affairs, and one of my responsibilities was to see to what extent we could handle these directly, and if we couldn't, then of course they would be assigned to staff members in the particular divisions that had an expertise. And at the same time, we set up a practice of having, I think it was a weekly, or maybe it was every 2 weeks, an international coordination meeting where we would have a liaison from each of the divisions who would be sort of the international liaison, and we would keep track of not only these requests, but also other things that were in international initiatives taking place in the divisions. For example, Corporation Finance had its own Office of International Corporate Finance, which handled all of the foreign issues and listings. So anytime they would be doing a rulemaking or whatnot, we would be interested in international affairs and coordinating that with them and knowing about it also so that we could help present that to some of the foreign constituencies that were interested in those changes.
And you recently retired from public service?
I did, in July 2005.
Mm-hmm. And looking back on almost five decades, essentially, of association with the commission, do you have, are there certain highlights that really stick out in your mind?
There are highlights. Just one story from the early days in the Division of Corporation Finance. When I left Corporation Finance, I left as a branch chief, and I think that's one of the things I'm proud of. I don't think I was the youngest branch chief, but I was one of the youngest ones in Corporation Finance, And at the time, when filings from different companies came into the SEC, there was no specialization in corporation finance. You could get an insurance company prospectus one day and a computer manufacturer the next day. I actually kind of liked that system because I thought the variety made the work much more interesting. On the other hand, there's certainly a strong argument in terms of uniformity of policy and comments and administrative practice that it makes sense to have all of the computer manufacturers in one branch and all of the banks in the other. That was starting just as I was leaving the commission in 1972. And one of the ironic things was I think that if I'd stayed, my branch would have gotten the tax shelters. And at the time, that didn't seem particularly attractive to me. But as it turned out, much of the early part of my years in private practice were spent handling tax shelters and direct participation programs. I did a lot of work in oil and gas and in other things like cattle programs as well. One of the other highlights that I remember very fondly is up until 1971, there were no publicly owned broker-dealers in the United States. I guess there was First Boston, but that was a special case. They had been spun off as a result of Glass-Steagall. But there were none that had gone public. But in the late 1960s, there had been a tremendous paperwork crisis in Wall Street, and a lot of the firms failed or consolidated, and they had to invest significantly in new back-office equipment, computers, and whatnot. And to do this, the old partnership structures didn't work that well, so they decided that they really needed to raise capital by incorporating. I actually was assigned the first of those offerings, which turned out to be Donaldson, Lufkin, and Jenrette, then a boutique broker-dealer firm. And it was quite fascinating working on that. And I actually reminded Chairman Donaldson when he became chairman of the commission and said, "You probably don't remember this, but I was the guy who cleared your public offering and helped you make a lot of money in 1971. And he did remember it quite fondly. I also got to work on the initial Merrill Lynch offering, which came shortly after that. And that was experience. As a result of that, one of the things I did just before I left the Corporation Finance Division was to develop some informal guidelines on disclosure for broker-dealer offerings.
Bob, is there anything you'd like to add before we close the interview?
Well, the last part, coming back in 1991 and the opportunity to work on what was really a new program for the Commission, the Technical Assistance Program, has been a tremendously rewarding experience for me to see that program grow and continue to flourish under my successor in international affairs. And the many contacts that